Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
In this modern age,
perfect.
Too many people have lost sight of the true meaning of Christmas.
Mom!
Hush!
Shut up, Ralphie!
So now, in the spirit of the original,
me to you, stop!
Traditional American Christmas.
Thanks a lot!
MGM presents A Christmas Story.
Dancing through the snow.
Uncle,
Uncle!
In a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the field we go. Laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Rewatchability. It's our final holiday-themed episode because the holidays are coming to a close soon.
Forever.
The holidays are done.
We're done with no 2020 more. Killed holidays. They're gone.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
We've got, I say this all the time, but we've got a big episode. It's a really big episode. It's one of the most beloved movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Universally seen. You'd have to be an idiot not to have seen this movie.
That's right. Ignorant goon would know enough to watch this movie.
Yeah.
We're talking about 1983's A Christmas Story. And before we get into that, I do want to take a minute to mention that we are an Entertainment One podcast, part of that podcast network. And I do want to thank all of the people that donate to our Patreon. That's where you go in and you kick a few bucks to help us keep the show going. We really appreciate it. You get the show early and ad-free and sometimes bonus content. We actually have some Christmas bonus content for you. Go look under the tree, the digital tree.
Do they have to wait until Christmas morning?
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
No peeking.
That's, of course, on the honor system. But we recorded an episode about some of our, what we like to watch around the holidays and that kind of thing. It was a fun conversation. So if you want to join that, go to patreon.com/rewatchability, and we really do appreciate it. And I do want to say, because it's the Christmas season, and we're ending the year soon, I do want to say a sincere thank you to everyone that's been listening. I looked at the charts that were on iTunes and stuff on all the different countries, and really was because I know most of the people that listen are in the US or Canada, but there's still there's people all over the world listening to this podcast.
Wow.
People in even people in Australia and New Zealand where they're just living life.
Oh, my God. They have no problems right now. Can we just move there? Be in a Lord of the Ring?
Yeah.
Just all the rich people are?
If you're one of the people listening in New Zealand, can you sponsor the three of us, too?
I'm eligible. You can marry me if it'll get the green card situation worked out.
And Blaine and I are, we'll leave our partners.
This is a pact we've made before this episode.
Yeah. All right. Big episode. Huge episode. We like to do these big ones when the actual Christmas time rolls around, because I think by the time this goes up, Christmas is in 2 days. I kind of alluded to this slightly in a cheeky sort of way a minute ago, but you guys have never seen A Christmas Story. This is watchability for you. We should have renamed it.
Yeah. It's my eternal
What the fuck
shame.
Is wrong with you?
I don't know.
Jesus.
I honestly don't know how this movie passed me by. And, like, it was a strange sort of thing. It was, like, I only assume what that movie yesterday is like, I haven't seen it, about the guy who wakes up.
Wait, are you just alluding to another movie you haven't seen?
There's
great.
Tons of movies I haven't
make your point.
Seen.
It's good.
But, like, at a certain point, everybody sort of started talking about this movie as a beloved Christmas favorite, and I'd never heard of it. And then all of a sudden, I began seeing things related to this movie, like that image of Ralphie doing the demonic smile, the BB gun, and that lamp. The leg lamp, and I was like, what the fuck is this? What is this all about? And, you know, I think by that time, I was just sort of over watching Christmas movies for the sake of Christmas movies. Because, I mean, a lot of the times they are a little bit sentimental, they're a little bit family orientated, and I want to watch movies that are sort of exciting and not necessarily set at Christmas or not necessarily about Christmas. So I never watched it, even though I knew it was directed by Bob Clark, who is very important in Canadian cinema for exploiting our tax shelter system and creating our entire film landscape in a way. So I knew that it was an important movie for Canada, but I never watched it. And I mean, one of the great things about this podcast, because there's tons of movies that I haven't seen or I didn't get the chance to see before we started doing this podcast, is a chance to sit down and actually watch these movies that I would not otherwise take my free time to watch. So I watched your damn movie, JM. You happy?
It was like such a casual suggestion. I just assumed you guys had seen it like the rest of the world. What about you, Blaine? Why have you never seen it?
Because it looked boring, JM.
Oh, okay.
It looked, as a kid, it looked so boring. There's like a kid, and he just wants like a BB gun. There's no explosions. There's no car chases.
I mean, he has a gun. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it shoots BBs. I don't know. Like it just like in my kid mind, it also looked really old. Like it looked like it was from the 50s,
right?
Because it was placed then, and
it takes place in like the 40s,
right? Yeah, so I it didn't appeal to me as much as I think it might have appealed to my grandparents' generation or my mom's generation.
Your grandparents' so you don't watch generation? It's not the Dick Van Dyke Show.
I mean, they're listening to radio shows. Little Orphan Annie, like, it just, it's very, it feels right. Very, very old.
So what you're saying is you don't watch any movies set before the date of your birth. Is that right?
This was on the date of my birth, and I still didn't watch it, so.
But it's set in the past. So you've never seen, like, Quest for Fire or, like, the Back to the Future after the first 15 minutes?
Apocalypto. No, right. Nothing. I don't go to the past. I live in the present, man. No, I just like it. Just felt boring. I feel that's what it was when I was a kid. It didn't look appealing. It all the separate things. It seemed like a lot of different short stories kind of slung together, and I don't know. It just didn't feel appealing to me.
You could tell it was a bunch of short stories, even though it's called A Christmas Story.
Well,
you're like, it's probably
going
to be short stories. I don't need that, man. I like a cohesive narrative.
They tested the title several Christmas stories, but it was less popular.
I think that it's also a bit hubristic to name yourself A Christmas Story. There's going to be other Christmas stories out there, and you're just saying you're A Christmas Story.
It's not saying the
that.
Christmas Story.
I know, but
yeah, there already is a The Christmas Story. It's Die Hard.
Right? But no one's going to say, like, no one's going to have, like, another Christmas Story. They stole that title. They were like, this is the title. We're going to have this title. This is going to be the Christmas movie everyone is going to watch every year. And I just think that's a little, I don't know, a little egotistical.
Calling them out. And
yeah.
You have the moral high ground on this because nobody watches this movie every year.
I definitely had never seen it before. And I'm interested to talk about it. Yeah. I don't know if many of my opinions have changed, but we'll talk about that as we talk about the movie. Maybe I'm the Grinch in this.
The Grinch isn't in this.
Episode.
You're thinking of the Grinch.
What did I watch? What about you, JM? How did it soothe the things that ailed you? How did this...
You asked for this movie for Christmas. Your parents wouldn't get it for you because they thought you put out your eye.
Right. And then it was behind the desk.
It was the VHS tape, that sharp cardboard corner. No, I, you know, this was never a favorite of mine in the way it is so many other people's. I kind of just assumed like it would be Blaine's favorite or something. I don't know why. Like you'd be like,
it's not
oh,
a romantic comedy.
That's true.
Come on, man.
But, well, he has some, there's some romantic tension with the teacher character.
Yeah, true.
but yeah, I do actually distinctly remember the first time I saw part of it. I remember I was at my grandparents' house. I was like a little kid. And I saw the part where Ralphie like beats the crap out of the bully.
Oh my God.
And the bully gets like the bloody nose.
That's so graphic. Like he was like, I thought he was going to cave his head in. It was like getting really dark.
It was very much like he grabs a stone.
You're like, no.
Oh my God.
But yeah, I had that. I don't even think I knew it was a Christmas thing yet. And then I kept watching. And it felt like, because I was like a little kid. I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be watching this like this. And then I saw there's a Christmas thing, and yeah, I had the weird reaction to it being like set in either late 30s or the early 40s, so it felt very just like weird and kind of gross in a way, just because the first thing I saw of it was this like kid's bloody nose. So it just seemed like this kind of like, and it is a little like rough around the edges in a way that a lot of other Christmas entertainment isn't, specifically the Christmas entertainment I was watching as a young kid, like, was all very sanitized and, like, you know, glossy and, you know, like, kid stuff. So
this
the fact
is a bit
that,
dark.
Like, it's a bit dark.
You wouldn't expect that from the director of Black Christmas.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, so I didn't even know what it was. I literally watched, like, 15 minutes of it. And it wasn't until probably years later that I found out what it that it was part of a Christmas story, and probably even longer after that, that I found out that it kind of had this huge following, or was beginning to have this huge following, because like I said, it was never one that I felt like I had to watch every year, you know, but I've certainly seen it many, many times over because of all the TV viewings. I honestly don't know if I've ever like sat down and watched it from beginning to end as I did this time. Like I had to rent it on iTunes, and like I've never rented it before because it was just always on TV, and so I've probably seen it dozens of times, but in this kind of hodgepodge, you know, you watch a scene here, a scene there, which is kind of like I think what you saw as a negative, Blaine, is probably why it's endured as this kind of TV favorite, because it is so episodic and so driven by these short bursts of stories that, like, yeah, I even got a little restless at times watching it now, but it's perfect for, you know, watching it starting in the middle. Like, you don't feel like you've missed out on anything, or watching the beginning of it and then doing something else. You know what I mean?
It's totally like a family gathering movie where you can put it on and talk to people and then check
out the turkey,
go into the kitchen and, you know, all that stuff. Like, it's, yeah. It's a background movie for sure.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I don't mean that necessarily. Yeah. I'm more saying like the structure of the movie lends itself well to TV in a way that other Christmas movies that have more of a narrative through line don't necessarily. Mm. But let's get into what actually happens in this movie in case anyone else listening hasn't seen it. Rob, do you want to do a rundown of the plot?
There are literally dozens of us. Okay, so A Christmas Story, it starts, as many stories do, at the beginning, with Ralphie looking through a toy store window. And this is a favorite Christmas tradition to go check out the department store windows, and sometimes there's displays. All the toys in this window are like very violent. This is the first thing I noticed about this movie, is that
well, they're all like World War II toys kind of things, like tanks and...
Well, it's World War I because it's the Red Baron's plane, for one.
Okay.
And this would be set before the U.S. entered the war. Like, they don't give a specific date. It's either late 30s or early 40s, but it's definitely, like, pre-America entering World War II.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
right. Because otherwise that would be a part of, you know, the backdrop of the movie, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he sees this toy, this thing, this object that he just alights a desire in him that has been unknown until now. It is a Red Ryder BB gun, and it's a very fancy BB gun, it sounds like. I don't know. I never had a BB gun. I lived sort of in the north where there was a lot of, like, rural people who were really into guns and BB guns. They'd be like, I shot a squirrel with my BB gun. And that was a lifestyle. But to me...
Wait, you didn't murder little rodents?
No. But
in your youth?
No. But to this kid, this is all he dreams about is this thing. So he's decided that this is what he's going to ask for Christmas, this BB gun. Now, he knows that it's a delicate process. And I should say that this movie is narrated by the author of the stories who, you know, this is all based off. Gene Shepherd, his name is. So he describes it and he tells us all of Ralphie's sort of interior thoughts and everything that he's thinking and feeling. Because Ralphie is, like, very conscious of the performance that it takes in order to get these Christmas presents, the things that you want, in particular something that's as dangerous as a BB gun. So, you know, when he asks, he sets it up by, you know, putting a advertisement in his mom's favorite magazine, and then he suggests it, and it seems like he knows what he's going to do, but he sort of screws it up, and his mom says that he can't get a Red Ryder BB gun because he'll lose an eye.
Hurry up, you're going to be late for school.
Yeah, I'm running late already.
Round one was over. Parents won. Kids, zip. I could feel the Christmas noose beginning to tighten. Maybe what happened next was inevitable.
Ralphie, what would you like for Christmas?
Horrified, I heard myself blurt it out.
I want an official Red Ryder carbine action 2-inch range ball air rifle.
No, shoot your eye out.
Which, I mean, that was the big danger when you were a kid. Like, everything, all the toys that were fun had the potential to make you lose an eye. But nothing more than a BB gun, I would say, probably.
Maybe Boba Fett's torpedo thing.
Is that how you broke your glasses?
That's right.
But so he has to figure out another way to get this BB gun. And this is sort of like the through line of the story on which all these other sort of vignettes sort of relate. Because this is sort of based on this writer's sort of short stories. A lot of them appeared in family magazines such as Playboy. Lots of wonderful family tales in there. And yeah, and they're sort of all sort of hung on this narrative of him wanting the BB gun. Like, his next step to get this Christmas present is to write a essay, a theme, they call it, on Christmas. And so he's going to write this thing about how he wants the BB gun, how he thinks it's a really great present, and he should get it. And it'll be great. His teacher will think it's amazing, and he fantasizes all of this, and then he will get the BB gun in the end. Meanwhile, there's a bunch of other stuff happening, too. Like, there's the whole family. We got the old man and the mom.
He seems very old, to be fair.
He is very old, yeah. Like, yeah, he's definitely older than
there's the
mom.
Grandfather and then the mother and then the
to be fair, you know, in like the 40s, like, that's what like 35 year olds look like.
Yeah.
It's the mines.
He's played by the great Darren McGavin.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And Ralphie also has a little brother who is pretty annoying, but he's still young, so, you know. and a lot of it is like this sort of slice of life stuff, like family stuff. Like, the dad, he has a hard time dealing with the furnace and he swears a lot, and the mom is just keeping everything together, making sure the kids get off to school and sacrificing everything for, you know, for what? For what?
I mean, the snowsuit scene was pretty good, too. Her trying to put the youngest into a snowsuit. It's pretty great.
Do you relate to that, JM, as a parent? Does that speak to you in a way that it maybe didn't when you were younger?
Yeah, totally. Like, actually, my kids are pretty good about it now, but there was a time where my oldest, when he was younger, he refused to put a snowsuit on. I mean, there's always like a thing that they refuse to do, and then when you do the opposite of that thing, they refuse to do it. You know, like they don't have a bath, and then they don't want to come out of the bath. Yeah, there's a lot of this movie like rings true. And that's what I kind of like about this movie, and I did relate to it a bit more now, because it is very much like, it's a good balance of nostalgia and like capturing that feeling of nostalgia, but it's also, you know, through the lens of a guy looking back, and, you know, it gives us moments of like him speculating what his parents were going through in a way, or like, you know, how they must have been feeling. Like, I mean, there's scenes of him like, you know, talking about the BB gun and getting dinner, but then he also says like, you know, my mom never had a hot meal for herself her entire life because she's constantly having to stand up and get the kids seconds and everything. And even like, yeah, so I think it's a good balance of that realism. And we've also got, you know, we'll talk about them, but there's moment after moment of like, you know, the kind of that childhood innocence being somewhat interrupted by like the awfulness of the real world, which we'll talk about. The first example, I think this is kind of where we're at in the story. So if I can mention it, is like the Ovaltine, the decoder ring scene.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He's been waiting to get this little orphan Annie decoder ring. I don't remember this from the Annie movie, but I guess Annie was a spy or something. Was she like working against the Nazis? I don't, you know, it's very confusing. But he gets this decoder ring, and yeah, he's like very excited to get the message from the radio, and it turns out just to be a damn commercial. And it breaks his heart. And it's, yeah, it's very relatable. Like, I remember, I mean, I don't remember, but it feels so familiar, you know?
Yeah, I feel like we've all had a moment like that.
Yeah.
In some way when we were a kid that, like, just killed our innocence a little bit.
When we talked about The Wizard on this podcast, it broke my innocence. I just thought it was a great movie about video games.
Not California.
Yeah.
No.
And there's a bunch of other stuff that is also like very true to life. Like the kids sort of dare one of the other kids to lick a pole, and it's winter, so it's very cold, and the kid gets his tongue stuck. And that's a big thing. Do you guys remember doing that when you were a kid? Did you put your tongue on the pole or convince somebody else to? Which was it, Blaine?
I mean, you knew I was involved somehow, and that's fair. No, I mean, I remember knowing that you could take hot water and get your tongue off the pole. So it wasn't as much a like thing that we did. We'd be like, oh, if that happens, you just
take some
warm water. Watching this movie is terrifying because the fire department just rips his goddamn skull off the off the pole. And you're like, what? Just use hot water. Water, though.
Yeah.
We're the fire department. No hot things.
They hadn't invented hot water yet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the boiler kept on breaking down. That's why they had no hot
Sorry,
water.
Sorry, kid.
But yeah, the poor kid like just can't talk for the rest of the movie. That kid goes through a lot in this movie. I kind of think the story would be more harrowing from his perspective.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. I think what I find fascinating about this story is that Ralphie kind of sucks. Like, he's not...
Yeah.
Usually when you write
a little kid.
He's a turncoat. Yeah.
No, I know. But he, like, you know, the second that any of his friends are in danger, he just abandons them to be, like, beaten up by the bully or, you know, to just stand out there with his tongue stuck to a metal pole. He's just like, I got nothing. I can't help you. And then even when, like, the teacher is asking him, like, where's your pal? What's his name? It's Flick. Where's Flick?
Yeah.
Where is Flick? He's like, oh, I don't Flick.
It seemed very, and everyone rushes to the window, except they're in their seats. And it seemed, that moment seemed very like, cool guys don't look like explosions type thing. Like, they're obviously in on it if they're standing in their seats and everyone else is rushing to see what's happening.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a good movie. Mm-hmm.
But that, yeah, that just felt realistic to me. Like,
yeah.
I don't think we're meant to think he's a bad kid, but I think we all have those moments that we think back on. We're like, oh yeah, we were kind of shitty. Like, yeah. Or, you know, I wish I'd told the teacher that Flick was outside. You know, it all just felt very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's also the bully. As we mentioned before, his name is Scott.
Scott Farkas.
But Scott, like right. S-C-U-T?
Oh, is it Scott? I always thought it was Scott.
I had the subtitles turned on, and it said Scott.
Oh, really? I'm going to look it up.
Like, so maybe someone mistranscribed, or maybe he was like the missile that was supposed to explode all the time in anger.
Well, the guy who played him is, I think he's Canadian, and he's on Twitter a lot.
Well, he was terrifying. He reminded me a lot of my, like, of the bullies in my neighborhood.
He reminded me of my bully, TJ Finch.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
I'm calling him out.
Why is your bully named after a restaurant, or is that TJ Fridays?
Like, that's TGIF Fridays.
Okay, yeah. So his name
is your bully.
His name is Zach Ward, and it is Scott. I always thought it was Scott. I guess I've never watched it with the subtitles, but yeah, he's on Twitter a lot. I see him pop up. Yeah, and he's in lots of stuff. I think he was in an episode of Lost.
He's great.
He is really good. Yeah,
I also like. How they play.
Hopefully he's not a cyber bully now. That'd be bad.
Yeah, that's
really
right.
Committing to the role after all these
years. He's just stalking the Twitter sphere while the theme from Peter and the Wolf plays in the background. Yeah. Anyway, that's really good. Also, one thing that we didn't mention about this movie is that a lot of it is filmed in our city, in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, the scene where that guy chases him and the whole bully stuff happens. All of that is sort of just south of Queen Street. And in fact...
Yeah, I noticed the depot of the streetcar depot in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And also the when they go and get the Christmas tree, that's also in Toronto. And the guy who sells them the Christmas tree is like a David Cronenberg veteran. He fought in the David Cronenberg Wars.
Oh, wow. Fought for our existence. That's great. Yeah. I'm glad that he did that.
The that Christmas tree lot. There's a building there now, but it was across from where Much Music is now.
Yeah.
Queen Street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And just...
Like kitty corner to it?
No, just across the street.
Okay.
It's crazy how much Toronto has changed in the last 40 almost years.
And all the stuff in the school... and outside the school, that was all shot in St. Catharines, which is a town between here and Niagara Falls, mm-hmm. for people that don't know.
Yeah, I could really tell that was shot in Canada because the school looked exactly like all Canadian schools do. Like,
totally.
There's no American schools that look like that. It's like a Canadian thing. It's like a slightly British-y mm-hmm. Canadian school.
Yeah. And the school has not been changed since 1939, so it's perfect.
Yeah.
And we should also mention that, like, a lot of stuff was shot in Cleveland as well. Everything mm-hmm. that wasn't shot here was done in Cleveland. The exteriors of the house,
the department store.
Big, beautiful department store, and all the
that
interiors
was awesome.
There. Yeah.
Can you imagine that, like, slide as a kid going to see Santa? That would have been amazing.
Apparently that was real.
Yeah, well,
that's insane.
They built it for the movie. They actually built it here and then had it shipped down to Cleveland to shoot in the store. And then the store liked it so much they kept it for a few years just for their regular Santa visits.
And then a kid broke his leg.
I like how in the beginning of this movie, the guy's like, what, they're not going to ship me a bowling alley. That's not going to happen. But they shipped a whole fucking department store down to Cleveland.
That's Hollywood
that's
North,
crazy.
Baby.
They shipped a streetcar, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They did a lot of work for this. We should mention the Santa scene, because that's the other one where it's like, I love the way that Bob Clark films this, because you get the distanced view of Santa Claus in the department store, and it just looks so, you know, romanticized and so lovely. And then as Ralphie and his brother get closer and closer, it just becomes like a literal waking nightmare.
Yeah.
Ho, 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 ho. your name, little boy?
Hey, kid. Hurry up. The store's closing.
Come on.
Listen, little boy. We've got a lot of people waiting here, so get going.
What do you want for Christmas, little boy?
Yeah, that's also so relatable. I think I do remember being afraid of Santa because I sensed something was off. It's not the real guy.
Really? Totally. That's another thing. Something this movie ties into that I don't think any other Christmas movie does, and it risks being like slightly off-putting for the sake of reality, but like everyone has like a picture of themselves when they were like a little kid with Santa just fucking bawling, like everyone, and I see it too, like I see it on social media, like friends with kids have, you know, post pictures of their kids crying on Santa's lap. That's a thing. That's almost like a rite of passage. So like the fact that all the kids in this movie are terrified of Santa. I mean, they have reason to be because the Santa in this movie is especially upsetting.
Yeah. I think he's a veteran of Bob Clark's early horror movies.
Okay.
Yeah. So he just like, you know, went back into his like slasher film roots to be like, this is obviously the guy who should play, say, Nick.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, this movie does, a lot of it feels similar to Black Christmas, which
I just watched Black Christmas.
Oh, did
like
you?
For the first time, like last week. Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah. I loved it.
Okay, good. Because I love that movie. That's one of my favorites. And I think, like, the way he.
So we could still be friends. Yeah. That's good. Oh, that's good. Whew.
No, but I just.
I was bringing up my list here.
As different as these two movies are, like, it feels like they do share some kind of DNA. I don't know. Like, they begin with like the exterior shots of the respective houses and has that kind of like snow covered, gauzy, just warm feeling.
They have those POV shots.
Yeah.
Yeah. You really feel like that one point where all the kids are being like manhandled by these elves is so terrifying. And then you are manhandled by these elves.
Yeah.
Like at the same point, like you're turned around with the camera point of view. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I feel like this movie is very much about like being a kid and kind of like growing out of being a kid a little bit in a way, like, you know, like starting to understand a bit more about like the workings of the real world. And Black Christmas is also a movie about like Christmas being a sort of landmark in maturation. It's, you know, it's about, you know, spending Christmas away from home and like making a new family with other people to a certain extent.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I love that movie too. Bob Clark. Bob Clark, you know, underrated director. He's done a lot of great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he was Canadian because of all the Canadian movies he directed, but he was not. He just came here, I think, in his like 20s or 30s and just, you know, took advantage of the tax shelter system for many years. And then he went back home. But also, I mean, he was a big fish in a small pond, a lot of people point out. And he sort of helped give us a little bit of Hollywood credibility in a strange way, even though he didn't really have any Hollywood credibility when he started making these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the rest of the stuff that happens in the movie, I mean, there's the lamp thing where the father, he wins a big prize. And, you know, what is it? It could be anything. It could be a bowling alley. He's winning the prize for a crossword puzzle or something like that. Was that a thing?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's how they, like, got spies to become spies.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So, yeah.
I guess he didn't win the real prize, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but that was another thing I remember seeing when I was a kid and just being like, what is this? Like, it felt so different from other Christmas entertainment. Like, all of a sudden there's this leg and this, like, sexy saxophone music, like, starts playing on the soundtrack.
I mean, it's so weird. Like, it's, yeah.
It's weird.
It's, I mean, it is erotic, but it is also, like, it's a disembodied leg, you know?
Yeah. This felt very like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Like, if, you know, where the dad falls in love with like Christmas somehow in some way that like no one else can get on the same wavelength as, like with Clark and his lights and this guy and his lamp. Yeah.
That guy totally, like, fucked that lamp, right?
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't
There's
you?
Your Cronenberg story.
There was some femoral sex there for sure. God damn.
And then Ralphie, his teacher doesn't like his theme. he gets a C+, and tells him, you know, he's going to shoot at his eye. And it seems like he's not going to get this BB gun because his aunt gets him a bunny costume, which he has to model on Christmas morning, and it's embarrassing. But
do you guys remember that, though? Like, getting, like, clothes that you didn't want to wear and people being like, put it on.
Yeah.
Put it on. Walk around. You're like, I just really just want to open my presents. Like, nope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the movie does that well because they amplify it by making it like the most ridiculous possible thing. But you're right. It like it takes that feeling that we've all had with like a sweater and like just exaggerates it.
It was unfortunately a sweater for me every year. My grandmother made like knit me, took the time out of her like life to knit me a sweater every year, and every year I was like, oh, this again.
You monster.
And it would be like a Ninja Turtle sweater and be like, well, it's not made by Mattel, so I don't really care.
I hate you.
Like, I was the worst kid.
You're worse than Ralphie. Like,
yeah, I was bad.
Okay, first of all, Playmates made Ninja Turtles. Just
okay, well,
put that out there.
Yeah, fair enough.
And also, you're a monster.
Yeah, I was a monster.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, yeah, like this movie like does kind of tap into like those shitty childhood impulses or those, you know, those things that you're. It's kind of like it's both unflinching and very like romanticized and nostalgic. I don't know quite how to describe it. Do you know what I mean? Like, they have that like shot of like Ralphie and his brother coming down and like seeing all the presents under the Christmas tree. Like, the way he photographs that like feels very real and like triggers memories of Christmas when I was a kid. But then, yeah, you also see it from the parents' perspective where you hear their conversations be like, yeah, I bought him a gun. You know,
what do you need two eyes for?
But like, you know, the nostalgia and the nice shots of Christmas and all that stuff, in amongst that is like the most grotesque shots. Like, we talked about the POV of Santa, but like the food photography in this is it will haunt me until it did. And like the little brother like scarfing up the food.
Oh yeah.
And the mother being like, you're my little piggy, like keep on. It almost felt like she was torturing.
Yeah.
Like, it was weird.
Like some sort of like Lars von Trier thing or something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Eat like a piggy.
In a horror movie. Yeah. Yeah. Squeal, squeal.
It's the Deliverance Christmas special.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Did anyone even know? But then there was also this, because it made you feel that of it, but then it also made you feel the kind of this, that is kind of real. Like, families do that to try to get their kid to eat, and it is this beautiful little game that they're playing. But then from the outside in, you're like, oh fuck, that's fucked up.
Yeah,
that's not good.
I also had a visceral reaction watching the tongue getting stuck scene. I found it really hard to watch, and so I think Bob Clark's horror expertise definitely comes into play here in several different places.
I think the one that was hard to watch for me was the singing of the Christmas carols at the church.
Well, yes.
Well, we'll get to
let's
that,
get
yeah.
So I mean,
let's see. Yeah.
He gets his gun because his dad gets it to him, and his mom just, you know, he steamrolls over his mom's wishes, and she just has to deal with it because she's a woman and it's 1940s and she doesn't have any power. Sorry. Yeah. But anyway, he gets the gun, and, you know, what does he do? He goes outside, and he enjoys it, and nobody loses an eye. Nothing bad happens. No.
Well, he almost shoots his eye out.
Yes, he almost shoots his eye out. He should have lost an eye. I think that's what this movie needed, was, like, the cold, hard lesson, you know? Like, yeah, gun control. Ralphie should have lost an eye. Imagine the different
gun
world that we'd live in,
the movie.
You know, if Ralphie lost an eye and then everybody was like, had that visceral thing in their...
I think the movie kind of gets at that. Like, I think...
Yeah.
I think it does show that, like... I mean, again, it's part of that, you know, this rhythm of, like, having this, like, you know, this setup where he builds up all his kind of eagerness and anticipation that we all have as kids, and then like immediately undercuts it with the awfulness of life.
Yeah.
And like, this is almost the ultimate version of that, because he finally gets the BB gun and immediately does the thing that everyone told him was going to happen, and he manages to wriggle out of it. And
That's fascinating.
Which is, again, a shitty thing, but like, I could see myself doing that as a kid, probably.
Oh, no.
For a moment, I thought, I'll fake it. They'll never know the lens is gone.
Oh, no.
Rapidly, my mind evolved a spectacular plot. Let's see, an icicle, yeah, falls off the garage and hits me in the eye. It would work. It had to work. Quickly, I whipped up some tears.
Ralphie?
Yeah, I mean...
Lying? To not get in trouble? Yeah.
But to not lose his Christmas present. Like, I feel like also, if he told the truth, his mom's taking that away, you know? I mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's never going to see that gun again, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure in... The next by next Christmas, there's going to be like between one and three eyes between those two kids. That's my prediction. You know, I bet Randy is not going to be able to see it all by.
Oh my God! And Ralphie is going to have three eyes.
Well, because he has extra protection with the glasses,
right? Yeah.
But then, yeah, then the turkey gets ruined by the dogs, so they have to go to the Chinese restaurant.
Yes. Yeah, and that's effectively the climax of this movie. I mean, maybe I guess the BB gun is the climax. But then the entire denouement is just like this racist.
I wouldn't say that, like, because there's other, you know, tensions in this movie. The only two black people in this movie are the robbers at the beginning. Like, there's some stuff like that.
No. The only one of the robbers was black. And I checked because...
Are.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But not the one that's called Black Bart. Because I was, like,
you
a little bit
concerned.
You can
just call,
like,
me Bart.
Yeah, right? But there's also... There's black kids in his school as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're not, like, characters. But, yeah, it's not a very diverse movie if you don't count the terrible depictions of... Chinese people at the end.
Yeah, I mean, this scene is
it just goes on and everyone's laughing.
Awful.
It just is cringy.
And there's nothing else happening in the scene. Like, it's not like,
no.
You know, it's like the focal point of this entire scene is just them.
Racism.
Yeah, it's just racism, exactly.
Also the duck, right? Like, oh, isn't it crazy these people would bring the duck with the head still on it? That's so wacky, because we don't do that in America. We chop the head off.
Right. this is an important distinction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It separates
when you're
us.
Bringing out the corpse of the animal. Yeah, no, I that scene's no good. I do want to say that scene was another one that's shot in Toronto.
But it did end well, I felt, because then Ralphie was like, then we started the tradition of Chinese food after that. Like, I knew what Chinese food was after that, and it was so good. I was like, that's great. I'm glad that he enjoys other cultures' food as well.
My question is, I mean, it's Christmas, it's a Chinese restaurant, where are all the Jewish people?
I had the same thought.
Big question. That was the lingering... the suspension of disbelief fell apart at that moment.
I mean, maybe that was a thing that came along later. But I mean, I like that. I like that there's a parallel Christmas tradition for some people who don't celebrate Christmas, because I mean, it can be overwhelming. And also, I mean, it's no good saying this now because anybody who doesn't celebrate Christmas probably isn't listening to this. But I think about it as well with our programming and people out there who don't celebrate Christmas. We're thinking of you. I know that you don't know that I said that, but we are.
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of Christmas movies at this time of year, but it's also hard because, like, this is a show where we're going back and we're, you know, trying to think of the stuff that we saw when we were younger. And, you know, for me, like, Christmas TV, Christmas movies were such a big part of this time of year when I was younger. And this movie was, too. So, yeah, like, yeah, I do feel bad if we alienated our listeners that don't celebrate Christmas.
Next year we should do a bunch of different, like, holiday tradition movies. It would be fun.
We can do Eight Crazy Nights.
Eight Crazy Nights, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the problem. Yeah, we're part of the problem. The sort of mainstream, Hollywood system doesn't really incorporate other holidays like Hanukkah into... I can't even really think of another Hanukkah movie. Other than Eight Crazy Nights.
No.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to be fair, I mean, particularly with Hanukkah, I mean, I think because Jewish people were writing so many of the Christmas entertainments.
That's right, yeah.
It sort of just became like, yeah, like it was ignored, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah, I think also a lot of people that don't celebrate Christmas probably are familiar with, you know, things like A Christmas Story just because they're on TV so much this time of year. Oh, I just quickly want to say that that restaurant, the Chinese restaurant, was shot in Toronto. It is still a restaurant, but it's a French restaurant now.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So you could do the same scene, but with like cartoonish, like Quebecois accents, I guess, if you remade it.
They should. They definitely should. And that's A Christmas Story.
All right.
Some Christmas stories.
It's one of the Christmas stories. All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. I've got some trivia questions for you guys for this movie that you'd never seen before this week, right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We're back on Rewatchability. We're talking about A Christmas Story. And I've got some trivia questions for you guys. Are you ready?
We're ready.
Let's do this.
Okay, question number one. Which beloved 80s TV show did A Christmas Story allegedly inspire?
Oh, The Wonder Years.
That's right, yeah. Sweet. I couldn't find any like official like documentation of this, but certainly like a lot of, you know, did you ever know this about A Christmas Story things, listicles and such, do mention that, you know, the kind of nostalgia and the adult narrator talking about themselves as a kid aspects of The Wonder Years were taken from this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Daniel Stern is in A Christmas Story too.
Oh, we'll get to that. Okay, question number two. Peter Billingsley, who plays Ralphie, who I think is quite good.
He's great.
Ralphie. Oh, yeah.
Like, kid really actors natural. Are so hard to find. Do
yeah,
well.
Exactly.
He's amazing.
He went on to become a producer, and he later produced another Christmas movie. Can you name it?
He went on to become a producer. He was, what, like 9 here in 1983? So that's like... So it's probably like late 90s, early 2000s. I'm trying to think our way.
Don't
out
go
of this.
On Jeopardy, Blaine.
Just to talk through it on Jeopardy. I'm doing phone a friend, whatever that. Millionaire. Who wants to be a millionaire? We have to talk through every answer.
That is correct.
What do you say, Rob?
Is Stealing Christmas a movie?
All right, it is, but that's not the answer. I was actually
is it Four Christmases.
It is Four Christmases.
Okay,
wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Nice.
How did you know that?
Because I looked. I did the research.
I was hoping that you guys would fall into my trap, and my trap was that Peter Billingsley has produced like almost every Jon Favreau movie.
Oh,
he produced Iron Man and Maid and all those. But he, from what I could tell, he didn't produce Elf, but he's in Elf. He has a cameo as one of the elves. And Jon Favreau, I watched an interview with the two of them, and Jon Favreau said like he just cast him kind of like as a good luck charm to like, he said, to like get some of that Christmas Story mojo in his movie.
That's great. That's fun.
Nice.
Okay, question number three. In 2015, Ralphie's Red Ryder BB gun was sold to a collector. How much do you think it went for? How much did Ralphie's gun go for in 2015?
$1 million.
That's ridiculous.
Okay, I'm going to go for $85,000 US.
No, you guys both overshot. If this was The Price is Right, you would have lost. It was $10,000.
Oh, that's not so much.
I mean, that's a deal. That's a steal of a deal.
But there were 6 of them made. And a few of them went to the crew. One of them went to Peter Billingsley. One of them is in the St. Catharines Museum.
Wow.
In St. Catharines. And what's unique about these six that they made for the movie is that Gene Shepard, when he wrote the story, it was based on, described the BB gun as having like the compass and the stock,
right,
and mm-hmm. everything that he says. And that's not actually a thing that the Red Ryder BB gun had. He kind of misremembered it.
Oh. And, so and they the had production, to like, make this new gun.
Yeah, they didn't realize till they were in production in the movie that he totally just misremembered what the guns were like. So the manufacturer, Daisy, had to make the film six unique guns.
They couldn't just change the script.
You'd think, but no. They made it special for the movie. I mean, you got to.
You can't even see the compass in the gun. At no point do you see that there is a compass in the gun stock. It's mentioned.
I think you can see it, no?
I don't know.
Maybe not.
The gun always points north. It's fine.
So that gun that was bought in 2015 for $10,000 was bought by the people that run the Christmas Story Museum. Or the Christmas Story House, which runs as a museum. Did you guys hear about this?
Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's the guy who, I guess, apparently made his fortune selling replicas of that lamp, the leg lamp.
Is that, yeah, I didn't know that actually. But he
made a fortune doing that?
Well, maybe not a fortune, but enough to buy the Christmas Story house and make it into some weird museum.
Yeah, a lot of sad middle aged dads want to fuck lamps. This guy.
Honestly, at this point, that lamp's looking pretty good.
Yeah, I just want something. I just want something I can turn on, man. I'm so old.
But he, yeah, so this guy, the Christmas Story house was put up for sale. And he bought it. Do you know how much he bought it for, Rob?
$1
million. $85,000.
Blaine's closer without going over because it was bought for $150,000.
Wow. I mean,
but he had to totally renovate it. Like the outside was a different color. And the inside wasn't exactly the same because they shot it on a soundstage in Toronto. So he renovated it all to look more like in the movie, and it operates as a museum. And you can actually book it as almost like an Airbnb, but you book it through their website, and you can go stay overnight. And I was reading, there was an article about it recently, about how, like, with COVID and everything, their business has not been what it was. And it's not, as of today, it's not booked for Christmas and Christmas Eve, which they said is kind of unheard of.
Guys, that's a great opportunity. Let's book the Christmas Story house for Christmas, and we'll just all go spend Christmas together.
We can't see our families. Why not see each other?
Yeah, great. In another country.
You know, we're not breaking quarantine to do that. That's awesome.
So check it out. I don't know if it's been booked since I last checked, but if you're a fan of the movie and you're in Cleveland, you could go spend Christmas there. Which, I mean, like, I almost wish I was a bigger fan of that movie so that I could do that. Like, because that sounds awesome. Like, if Fox would rent out, like, whatever floor they shot Die Hard in. Or the Nostromo, yeah. No, but I was thinking, like, yeah, like, they could turn, like, have, like, a Nakatomi Plaza-themed Airbnb thing. I would do that.
Can you imagine if there was just a whole industry of, like, movie fan Airbnbs where you can stay in, like...
Oh, no, Rob, there are.
Oh, shit.
There totally are. There's, like... we'll talk about it off air. There's...
Okay.
There's some funny ones. One was literally... There was one in Vancouver that was literally just, like, a closet next to a stairwell, and they were like, rent out the Harry Potter room because Harry Potter slept in a cupboard under stairs.
That's so funny.
That's sad.
There was... a deleted sequence from this movie. Did you guys know about this? That was almost this extended fantasy scene where Ralphie and Flash Gordon fight Ming the Merciless.
Interesting. Yeah. And I saw that Ming the Merciless was played by this guy, Colin Fox, who was on Psy Factor, a bad Canadian TV show.
Oh, right. Amazing. That's awesome. Yeah.
So, yeah, that got cut up. But there's some photos of it online, which are kind of funny to look at.
That's sort of interesting because isn't the Flash Gordon movie like a favorite Christmas movie in Britain? And apparently, like, even the Queen watches it.
Whoa, really?
Is that because of the Queen soundtrack?
Yeah, she thinks it's really clever. She's like, oh, I did the music for this.
I have heard that, yeah. Like, the Queen watches that at Christmas or something. That's weird.
I mean, that is weird. That's a terrible fucking movie.
I mean, I don't watch The Crown, but if there was like a season of The Crown that was just like 7 or 8 Christmases in the life of the Queen watching Flash Gordon, I would check that out.
Like Mystery Science Theater style, making comments.
Yeah, just Olivia Colman riffing.
I would watch that.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah, we mentioned earlier, we alluded to the fact that there are some sequels to this movie, and I say sequels plural.
Whoa.
First of all, the most kind of official sequel, I would say, was the 1994 movie It Runs in the Family, which is also known as My Summer Story. Do you guys ever see this?
No.
I don't know why you would have. this was another Bob Clark movie. And again, he collaborated with Gene Shepherd to tell the story about Ralphie, here played by Kieran Culkin.
Good Culkin.
Yeah.
And the dad and the mom are played by Charles Grodin and Mary Steenburgen.
Oh, nice. That's great.
Yeah, and I've never seen it. I really should, because all of those people are great.
I would check it out.
And yeah, it's not set at Christmas, but it just continues the story of the family. There was also, just a few years after this movie, in 1988, they again did an adaptation of Gene Shepherd's stories about Ralphie, which is kind of, you know, like the autobiographical kind of stand-in for his childhood. They did a Disney TV movie called Ollie Hop Noodle's Haven of Bliss.
Wow.
Good name.
Which has not become a classic.
So yeah, A Christmas Story is not looking so bad right now, huh, Blaine?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And it's about Ralphie when he's 14, and it's about like the summertime and going on a trip with his family. And here, Ralphie's played by Jerry O'Connell.
Oh wow!
Whoa.
Canada's own. Is he?
He
is he Canadian?
Into that role? I don't think he is.
And then, as we mentioned, there was the much maligned Christmas Story 2. From 2012 that went straight to video, featuring Daniel Stern as the dad, from the director of The Flintstones and Jingle All the Way and some other straight-to-video Scooby-Doo movies. this one is set 7 years after the first movie. Ralph is now 15. He's coursing with hormones. You know, he wants to meet women, and he wants a convertible, a car, for Christmas this
year. You'll
lose
an eye.
Yeah. I don't think anyone said that. You'll lose your virginity.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, and that from, I've never seen it, but I watched the trailer and it looks awful from all accounts. It's terrible. I mean, it's very like slapstick. There are scenes of like, you know, people dressed as Santa's elves hitting each other with giant candy canes, and like one of Ralphie's friends working at a department store like accidentally like grabs a woman's breast, and like her boyfriend gets angry at him, that kind of thing. It looks like a nightmare.
That sounds like a Playboy story more than right. This one did.
And then finally there was A Christmas Story Live just 3 years ago. There was, you know how they do those like live, you know, shows based on pre-existing properties to the enjoyment of no one?
Right.
They did The Grinch this year. I don't know if you guys watched that.
Right. No.
They did that in 2017. Maya Rudolph played the mom. I don't know why Maya Rudolph was doing this.
Yeah.
And Matthew Broderick was the narrator, like the Gene Shepherd part.
He's a good narrator. Ooh. He has some practice.
Yeah, I watched some clips on YouTube and like, yeah, it seemed pretty good, but he was also like in the scenes, like just kind of hanging around like a ghost. Oh. Describing what was happening, which was just kind of weird.
Yeah.
So another thing about this movie, a big reason why it's become so popular is that they have those 24-hour marathons
right.
on cable TV. So the movie, the rights to it were sold in 1986 as part of a 50-movie package deal to Warner Brothers from MGM. And this movie was basically just tossed in to like make it a round number of 50 movies. and the channel TNT showed it as a 24-hour marathon for the first time in 1988 as kind of like a joke or a publicity stunt. And it ended up just becoming a big hit, and they've done it every year since, I think, and people all tune in.
They do that with, like, the James Bonds, you know? They just do these, like, huge marathons over the holidays to try to get people to
watch. Yeah, but those are, like, 20 movies. This is one movie over and over.
Yeah.
It's like those people that watch Cats over and over again for charity. Like, it's...
Oh, jeez.
I did want to mention, like... I guess there has been, like, some debate on the internet in recent years about, like, whether or not elements of the movie are kind of problematic now. Like, obviously, the scene in the Chinese restaurant is not so great. Oh, I did want to mention the scene for the Chinese restaurant in the live version they did a few years ago was drastically changed so that the...
Even more racist? Yeah.
No, thankfully. They had the same scene where the waiters come out and sing, but instead they hired like an LA-based a cappella group, and so they sang "Deck the Halls," you know, flawlessly, and it sounded beautiful. And then the actor playing the dad said, like, "Oh, I wasn't expecting that." And then Ken Jeong, who played like the maitre d' of the restaurant, was like, "What were you expecting?" It's kind of like fun nod to the
wink, wink.
Awful scene that was originally there.
Well, that's good.
But then there's also been like some talk about like, is this movie pro-gun? Like, you know, I think a few years ago there were like a few think pieces written about this. You know, given all the mass shootings in the States, I think people were starting to like interrogate like, you know, toy guns as, you know, a sort of, you know, a problem in American toy culture. And that conversation has been renewed a bit this year. I don't know if you guys saw that viral video of Santa refusing to bring a toy gun to a small child. Did you guys see that?
Mm. That's cool.
No.
Like, I even think A Christmas Story was trending on Twitter because it was like there was a Santa Claus, I think it was in New Jersey, and the kid said he wanted a toy gun. And Santa was like, I don't bring toy guns. Like, maybe your dad can get it for you, but Santa doesn't do that. And then the mom like rushed over. It's like, no, he wants a Nerf gun. And the kid was like four or something. The kid looked super young. It's like, oh, no, he wants a Nerf gun. And Santa's just like, yeah, no, sorry.
Sorry, man.
And that became like a huge, like you know, right-wing media freaked out about it. And were like,
they're,
liberals are ruining Christmas, like with their woke Santas.
Yeah.
I feel conflicted. I mean, I think there is something to like, you know, like the culture of guns and violence. But I mean, this is a movie that was about the 40s. And that's what people, especially like young boys, were sort of socialized into. There were Westerns on, I mean, in the radio, not on TV yet. There was like a culture of guns. I mean, you can criticize it, but criticizing something that happened 60 years ago, what's the effect going to be? There's not going to be any, you know, change to like right now. Like, I don't think we have the same sort of culture of guns as they had in this, which is why it was so like shocking when like the entire store window was full of like war machines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think like this movie kind of idolizes guns either. The kid does.
Mm-hmm.
And he does like sleep with it at the end. I'm sure the dad was sleeping with a leg in the same bed, but like the kid did almost put his eye out with it and had to lie to cover it up. Like there was some danger there. So I don't know if it kind of, I don't know, is pro gun, but my mom was like that too. She was like, I'm never going to get you a toy gun. And I had to make one out of Legos and stuff.
You had to use your imagination.
Yeah, exactly. I had to get creative. Ugh.
Make one out of soap.
Ernest.
Well, that's A Christmas Story. That's pretty much all I wanted to talk about. I know you guys hadn't seen it before, but how did you like it?
I enjoyed aspects of it a lot. I really like the feel of it. There aren't a lot of movies or entertainment that have that sort of like, I mean, it does feel a little bit old-timey with the sort of like, the nostalgia, the telling of these sort of short vignettes that all sort of like tie together sort of loosely. It's very like literary with the narrator sort of speaking everything. But, you know, it felt very familiar. Like it reminded me of something else that I never really experienced as a kid, but I heard like once. And was like, oh, I get why people are sort of into this, but also I never have to see it, or I mean, I never have to hear it again. It's Stuart McClane's Christmas stuff. Like, I know a lot of people really love his stuff. To me, he always seemed like a sort of like stuffy old boring dude, but then one Christmas, we were riding home with my then girlfriend's stepdad, and it was playing on the radio, and it's like, oh, this is kind of nice in its way. So there were parts that I found really enjoyable. I also really liked the voice of the author, Gene Shepherd. I thought it was a really interesting voice, and I'd never heard it before. But recently, I checked out this Mingus record, Charles Mingus.
Wow, yeah?
Called The Clown. And it's this crazy record where, I mean, of course, it's a lot of, like, you know, crazy Charles Mingus jazz stuff. But then there's this improvised Gene Shepherd story to it as well. It's a neat record. And then while I was researching him a little bit further, I found out that he's a really huge influence on Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Which is interesting. I mean, you know, obviously Seinfeld was a huge cultural touchstone.
Did Gene Shepherd date a teenager when he was like 35?
I hope not. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Also, apparently, Gene Shepherd's stories were an influence for a Steely Dan album.
Oh.
Jesus. The musical resonations here is crazy.
I mean, I just thought that was really cool. So, I mean, I would be interested. I love these style of short stories. I mean, that sort of reminds me of, like, Stephen Leacock is someone that we have in Canada. There's, like, a wittiness to them. There's, like, a realness to them. There's an authenticity to them. They're, like, a little bit nostalgic and sentimental. And I think those things turned me off when I was younger. But now I can sort of get past it. So I think I would watch A Christmas Story again. If it was on TV, if TV was still a thing, if I could visit my family on the holidays and just watch TV like I usually do on holidays, I might not turn off A Christmas Story if it was on. I might go through the ExpressView dish menu and then click on it and be like, parts of this are okay. Parts of this make me feel like, bring me back to when I was growing up, the feelings that I had when I was a kid experiencing Christmas. So I'm going to say it's rewatchable. What about you, Blaine?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think my opinions, like reading the cover opinions when I was a kid, have changed too much. I do see a lot of the value in this movie. I think it's like it's just a highly nostalgic movie. This is like what we trade on in our show. But it's one of those movies that I think you have to have watched as a kid to really appreciate in full. Because I still found large parts of it boring, and I, you know, there were some parts where I was like, oh, this is a little cringy. But then other parts, like when Ralphie's beating that kid and has his PTSD fucking thing going on, and he has to like lay down in his bed with a cold compress, I'm like, that's interesting. And that's really interesting to me. The whole Santa Claus scene was great. There were so many scenes that really worked. And in that way, it kind of, like you mentioned, Rob, Stephen Leacock, Sunshine Sketches of a Small Town, it did feel like sketches of Christmas in a large part. And I don't even know whether the through line of the gun almost needed to be there to draw these all together. But I did appreciate what it said about guns. They were dangerous and you could put your eye out. And I thought the kid acting was amazing. I don't know how they found these kids in St. Catharines they hired them elsewhere, but they must have cast a wide net because these kids were so natural and so fun. And so, like, I remember kids reacting that way to me as a kid, like when I was a kid too. And so, yeah, there was lots of parts of it that I really did like, but I don't think I'll ever watch it again. Hey, if it's on and my family's all there and I'm actually in the same room with them,
oh, A Christmas Story. Aw, let's just watch this. Blaine, you love this movie. Come on, let's just watch it.
Hey.
Oh, there's Ralphie.
If I'm in the same room with the people I love, then I will watch A Christmas Movie for 24 hours straight. That would be
said you had to do that.
My pleasure on TNT.
But if you want to, but now you're committed to it.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be part of my rotation. And, you know, if it's on... It's on, but it's not one of those things that I'll probably go back to.
Sorry, kids, Christmas is canceled.
I mean,
Blaine doesn't want to have Christmas.
Just for that Chinese restaurant scene alone, Christmas is
canceled. Oh, yeah, Christmas is canceled.
No, but I totally see that it is. And so many things from this movie have become part of all our culture. And I mean, I guess were part of culture before that, but brought it to a new generation. You know, there are people in China starving and all that stuff. Like,
you
hear that. You hear that stuff just as a kid around the dinner table, or some kids even make fun of it around other dinner tables and stuff.
When I was a kid, it was Ethiopia.
Yeah, it was Africa for me. Yeah. I don't think my mother ever said that, but I heard like other kids saying that, and that was the thing.
What country do you scapegoat to make your kids eat JM?
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. I do. Yeah, that is weird. I forgot they said that at the beginning of the movie, and then they end the movie in a Chinese restaurant. And also the movie almost opened with him fighting a 1940s racist Asian stereotype from the movies. So maybe there's more to unpack there, but you know, we're not going to do it.
No. We'll leave that to someone else.
We've put in our time.
So I'll throw it back to you, JM.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoyed it this time. I think the movie certainly has faults, like we've discussed. I think it does kind of drag in a way, whereas like, yeah, like it makes total sense as a movie to, it makes total sense as a movie to watch on TV and to enjoy that way. But it, you know, it was hard to like picture people sitting down in a movie theater in 1983 and watching it, like, because it is so like episodic and it takes
it feels kind of like a drop-in movie, like you can like drop in and leave, and
but I like that about it, for you know, for all the reasons we described. And I think the thing I like about it most is what I keep coming back to, which is it's really hard to thread that needle of being both like wistful and nostalgic and really getting to like the heart of like how it felt to be a kid, but at the same time like having these you know, goggles of realism that you have as an adult, where you can not shy away from the unpleasant parts or the gross parts, or you know, the understanding of, you know, what your parents might have been thinking. I was also thinking about it in a bit of a different context now, because like we're obviously living through one of the hardest years of our lifetime, and Christmas is going to be very different for everybody right now. And this movie is also kind of, you know, I think back to like how different last Christmas will be from this Christmas even. And this movie takes place, like we said, in the late 30s or early 40s, before the war began for the U.S., for the country this movie takes place in. So it's weird that this movie is also kind of about this bubble of innocence before this impending doom, or this, you know, this catastrophe. That
Ralphie's dad died at Iwo Jima.
He's too old. But I mean, it's also like you feel like the remnants of the Depression in this movie, too. So it's weird that, you know, we're coming out of one tragic American event and heading into, I know obviously the war was ultimately victorious for the States, but like, I mean, it's, you know, the Christmases to come are going to be ones full of hardship as well. So I think the timing of this movie is interesting in terms of it being this little sliver of normalcy inside of this crazy time. So like I almost reacted to it more strongly because we're currently living through a time where we don't get to have that degree of normalcy, and seeing that the movie kind of subtly hints at the precariousness of that I don't want to say the word normalcy again, but of that comfort. So yeah, I dug it. I think it's really great. It's still not, you know, one of my absolute favorites that I feel like I need to watch, you know, like a Die Hard, like a I Love the Original Miracle on 34th Street. But yeah, I still think there's a lot of good stuff there.
Nice.
That's it for this week. Happy holidays, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to hit us up during the holidays, you can find us on Twitter at Rewatchability, Facebook.com/Rewatchability. I think there's an Instagram. And as always, you can like and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or on whatever podcast app you use. Until then, don't shoot your eye out.
Good advice. Ah!
Oh, no, Rob.
It was a microphone. How did he do it with a... Jesus.
It's a shotgun mic.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.